Morning, everybody. We welcome you if you are our guest this morning. Thank you so much for coming to be with us today. We appreciate to my brothers and sisters in the Lord, we appreciate so much all of your service in the Lord's kingdom and whichever of the various activities or ways of serving or things that we're trying to do together, you may be involved. We're grateful to you and for you. A while back on Super Bowl Sunday, that evening I noticed some things about you and about my recognition of you. I had no trouble that day figuring out some things about you in relation to those teams and that game. A lot of you had a jersey or a sweatshirt or a t-shirt or a jacket on representing one of the teams. A couple of you had a jersey or something representing the other team. A few nameless people here had no idea which teams were playing. And I was able to decide whether you were a football fan, what team you rooted for, and how intensely you might have been cheering for that one or the other of those teams. You know, when you stop and think about it, if it were that easy to recognize ourselves or other people, or for other people to recognize us with regard to our walk with Jesus, it would be a blessing, wouldn't it? If it were less confusing to ourselves, if there were not any doubts about it that we had to struggle with, if we could always see exactly where we are going in relation to Him, it would be so good. And particularly where the concept of being a disciple of the Lord enters the picture. We've been singing about being a disciple without using the word this morning, to walk in His footsteps, to follow His leading, to have our lives shaped by His blessed example. That's exactly the concept of being a disciple. The word, the original word, I'm told, really means to be a learner, to be a student, to be an apprentice of Christ. In the New Testament days, the custom was for one who was a student of a particular teacher or rabbi might follow that teacher, hearing not only what he taught, but watching how he applied that teaching in everyday life and gradually becoming more and more like him. Jesus once said himself, a disciple or a disciple, when he is fully trained, becomes like his teacher. That's the idea in that concept. And of course, that's what we want to be doing. That's why we're here today. That's why we have sung and why we have remembered Jesus and why we've prayed to the Father in His name. We want to be following Him. It's also our mission. That's what we want to make. We want to help other people be disciples of Jesus, to learn how to live and how to hope and how to love from Him and not from any of the various other forces that often pound our minds and our hearts in everyday life. How do you recognize a disciple? Fortunately, the one we are trying to learn from and to follow had some things to say about that himself. And particularly in the Gospel of John, and really in the other writings of John, this comes up. It'd be a shame for us to believe enough in Jesus and what Jesus had to say about why to be disciples and not enough and what he said about how people will recognize whether we are that or not. In the Gospel of John, there are three statements in which Jesus said, this is how you can know, this is how other people will know whether you are following me, whether you're listening to what I teach, whether you're becoming like me in your life. So it's interesting. We'll just mention mentioned these three passages. All of them are familiar, but looked at in this particular way, I think it's instructive to us. First off, John 8, verses 31 and through 32. The Lord teaches us that if you abide in my word, you're truly my disciples. This is a passage where there's been a long conversation going on that resulted from Jesus claiming, I am the light of the world. And the whole discussion went on. And some people began to, at least on a surface way, maybe to begin to believe. Maybe he is that. And verse 30 says, as he was saying these things, many believed in him. But then Jesus said, verse 31, to the Jews who had believed him, if you abide in my word, then you are truly my disciples, and you'll know the truth, and the truth will make you free. Look at the word that's translated here, abide. It means to continue in, or to remain in, or to live in, or to dwell in, or to make yourself at home in. To make yourself at home in my word, he teaches, is what how you'll know if you're really my disciples. Not an initial spasm of belief which quickly forgets what the Lord taught and doesn't practice it when the real circumstances of life come, but instead a persistence, a consistency in living which uses the Lord's word in navigating all the circumstances of life and over a long time. Some translations will say, if you hold to my teaching, then you're truly my disciples. Remain in my word. It means that you don't have to be convinced that it's relevant. You've learned from experience in doing it and seeking to do it that it always is useful. It means that you welcome his teaching, his word, that you live with it so continuously that it becomes your way of life, that it's a permanent influence on everything else that you do, say, or think in everyday life. Jesus says, if you do this, they'll know who your teacher is. In the New Testament, people are disciples of different teachers. There are those who are the disciples of John the Baptist, that is. There are those who are the disciples of the Pharisees. There are disciples of other teachers. But there's one Jesus who teaches to live in the way we've been singing about this morning. And he says, if you do this, then you'll know what's real, what's true, what's genuine, what's best, and the truth will make you free. You'll discover over time that you're free not only from sin and death or from condemnation or from the enslavement or the bondage of habits and practices that are contrary to what's good for anybody. You'll discover that you're free from fear, that you're free from being dominated by people and what people think, that your teacher matters and his guidance is safe and good. That's one way to where people will know who disciples of Jesus are. The second way occurs over in chapter 13 of John, at verses 34 and 35. And you all already know that this is the night when the supper, the Passover, has been observed. And at the supper, we're told in verses 1 and 2 of this chapter that Jesus, knowing what was going to happen, loved his disciples, and he loved them to the end. That might mean all the way to the end of his life, or it might be he loved them completely. He loved them totally. You also will remember that in this text, these disciples have shown themselves capable of jealousy and of littleness and of misunderstanding and of betrayal. And yet that Jesus is, before this night is over, He's going to be arrested, and then he'll be giving himself in a humiliating death in order to bear the judgment of their sins. In verses 34 and 35, he says, "A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, just as I have loved you, you also are to love one another. By this all people will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." The word Jesus uses for love here is the choosing kind of love. It's not the automatic affection that people feel for those who are just like them and whose personalities and temperaments appeal to them. It is a word which means, I will, like Jesus, who is giving himself in a humiliating way, I want to love, I want to practice the commandments of the Lord toward you because I am a disciple of Jesus, because I'm trying to imitate him and not merely respond to you. You remember that the commandment for people who believe in God to love their neighbors is not new. In the Old Testament, it says, you love your neighbor, remember how it said it? As yourself. What's new is here is love not your neighbor, but one another. And love one another not as yourself, but as I have loved you. Now, how had he? He washed their feet. He's about to give himself. He did it in spite of their weaknesses and their flaws. He loved them in that way. Many times the New Testament reminds us that that is the object and the goal of being taught by Jesus, for us to love one another as he has loved us. For example, in 1 Timothy 1 and verse 5, when Paul is instructing Timothy about his own work and service in the kingdom, he says, "The aim or the goal or the end of our charge is love that issues from a pure heart and a good conscience and a sincere faith." For us to treat each other the way the Lord has treated us in a self-giving way is the whole point of our having been taught the gospel. In 1 Peter chapter 1, at verse 22, it says, "Having purified your souls by your obedience to the truth for a sincere brotherly love," this is the love of the brotherly kind here, "love one another earnestly from a pure heart, since you have been born again." The object of the idea of this is family love. One of the writers, the early writers who wrote about Christianity, is a man named Tertullian. Tertullian is writing about the way the pagan world viewed Christians. And he said, and here's the, "See," they say, "how they love one another." That's how the disciples of Jesus were known. Jesus said, "For by this all people will know that you are my disciples." The third way now. So first way, they'll know if you abide in my word, and you'll know. Second, they'll know and you'll know if you have love for one another. That you're imitating me, that you're following me. Third case is in John chapter 15. Same night, a little later in the conversation, and the illustration this time is with the vine and the branches and the gardener, the vine dresser, and the fruit that's borne by the branches. Jesus was the vine, the Father is the gardener or the vine dresser, and then there are branches in him. The only imperative, the only command in this whole section is in verse 5. In verse 5 it says, I'm the vine, you are the branches. Whoever abides in me and I in him, he it is who bears much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. All right, the imperative is verse 4. Abide in me and I in you. That's the imperative. The reason, as the branch can't bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. And then come to verse 8. By this my Father is glorified, that you bear much fruit and so prove to be my disciples. Now, from what I've read about the vine, the imperative being abiding in the vine, and the Father dressing or caring for the branches, I conclude that the fruit is not manufactured. There's not a magic human way or means to guarantee that people will want to be disciples, even if they can see what a disciple is. Nor is there any way that we can make up somebody else's mind for them. But we can make it easier. Bearing much fruit, Jesus said, will glorify my Father. Now, what does that mean? To glorify means, and this is from the lexicon, I'll say it that way, to influence one's opinion about another one so as to enhance the latter's reputation. To glorify the Father is to enhance the Father's reputation. When this is used toward God, the lexicon says it means to cause to have splendid greatness. How can people like me or you do anything to enhance the reputation of the great living God? The Lord says it happens by bearing much fruit. Now, what fruit? It's a mistake, I think, to make it only one kind of fruit. It means to live so as to enhance the Lord's reputation by embodying His character, by being shaped by His example, it's the whole outcome of life, the whole way of life is involved in being the fruit of the gospel. In Paul's letters, in order, it happens like this. In Galatians 5, verses 22 and 23, there's the fruit of the Spirit, the disposition or temperament that involves love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. In Ephesians chapter 5, it involves the moral conduct of life. The fruit of light is found in all that's good and right and true. In Philippians 1, it's the direction or the tone of life. It's the fruit of righteousness, it says. In Colossians 1, it's the good work in behalf of the gospel which is aimed toward helping other people become Christians. Colossians 1 in verse 6 mentions the gospel bearing fruit wherever it goes. Verse 10 mentions bearing fruit in every good work. So every good work in behalf of the gospel is a fruit itself, and in that way may bear fruit. The kind of fruit that is born honors the vine from which the life is drawn, and it honors the care of the gardener who tends the vine. And it speaks well of the branch who's abiding in Christ. Now look at those three together for a moment. You may have noticed that the one which says, by this shall all people know, is the middle one. But the fact that the other two also talk about knowing that, or the disciples being known, means to me that they are related. And here's what I would say. First off, each of these defines limits and balances the other. If you are simply intending to do what the Lord's Word said, and you have no warmth or no interest in other people at all, and you no intention about bearing fruit that honors the Father, that might make you zealous and it might make you strict with the Word, hard at it, but not really helpful in other ways. If you just wanted to be, let's just love each other, then we might be warm and fuzzy and all of that, but not really have anything ever that disciplines us to be any different than we would have been if we never heard of Jesus. And if we were just concerned about being busy and getting things done and all of that, we might forget, wait, is this what the Lord's Word calls us to do? And is this causing us or helping us to have affection, love, and devotion toward each other? These three have to be woven together. They belong to each other to talk about one thing. Here are people who, because they are following Jesus, who is full of grace and truth, want to listen to His teaching, want it to guide their lives, want to care about people like He does, and are involved in bearing fruit to the Father's glory, because those are three things Jesus did. He did His Father's will, He loved people, and He certainly bore good fruit. Secondly, notice that each of those things answers to a human need which contributes to the sense of lostness, the sense of something missing that all of us feel. And in that way, each of these is a way of appealing to the heart of someone else who might become a disciple. We all wish in this confusing world we could know what's right. We could know what's AI produced and what has no basis. We could know what was a party politic outlook. We could know what was advertising. We could know what was an old wives' tale. We could know what's true. We have a need for belonging, a sense that we are valued and accepted and someone cares about us. And all of us wish that we had a purpose in life where we were getting somewhere, where we were doing some good, where we mattered. And what Jesus says is that in following Him, those three great needs can be met. Each of those gives us an opportunity, a point of contact with the people around us to do some good. And third, each of those would be beneficial toward us in any of the other relationships in our lives. These are three things together that would make us good and decent people. These are three things together that would enrich our family life and our experience in our marriages or with our children or with our grandchildren. If we have something that guides us other than just what we want at that moment ourselves, no matter what anybody else thinks, if we felt like that really caring for someone important in our lives was what we're here for, if we could do things for the well-being of the other person and not just ourselves, and if we could just have a place where we abide, something that we draw life from, someone who's tending our efforts so that something good comes from it, so that we produce good fruit, that would be a wonderful thing in any other relationship of our lives. How will people know whatever else we do? People will know if we abide in the Lord's Word, if we love one another, if we bear fruit. Someone gave me the disciples, a statement of the disciples' heart, the disciples' outlook in life. I hope you will have read this at some point yourself. Some of you will not have. I'd like to finish by saying, as important as it is for us to be able to know and for people to be able to know who disciples are, it's important for Jesus, the Lord, to know, to recognize disciples. Here's a statement to that effect. I'm a part of the fellowship of the unashamed. The die has been cast. I've stepped over the line. The decision has been made. I'm a disciple of His. I won't look back, let up, slow down, back away, or be still. My past is redeemed. My presence makes sense. My future is secure. I'm finished. I'm done with low living, sight walking, small planning, smooth knees, colorless dreams, tame visions, mundane talking, chintzy giving, or dwarf goals. I no longer need preeminence, prosperity, positions, promotions, platitudes, or popularity. I don't have to be right, first, tops, recognized, praised, or regarded, or rewarded. I now live by presence, lean by faith, walk by patience, lift by prayer, and labor by power. My face is set, my gate is fast, my goal is heaven, my road is narrow, my way is rough, my companions few, my God reliable, my mission clear. I cannot be bought, compromised, detoured, lured away, turned back, deluded, or delayed. I'll not flinch in the face of sacrifice, hesitate in the presence of adversity, meander in the maze of mediocrity. I won't give up, shut up, let up until I've stayed up, stored up, prayed up, laid up, preached up for the cause of Christ. I'm a disciple of Jesus. I must go till He comes, give till I drop, work till He stops me. And when He comes for His own, He'll have no trouble recognizing me. My colors will be clear. If I abide in His Word, if I love you, and if I bear fruit, and only He can help with either one of those things. Are you a disciple of Jesus, and wouldn't you want to be? The disciples were first called Christians at Antioch and have been since then. And if we can help you today in becoming a Christian by making the good confession and being united with Christ in obedience to the gospel, let us know by coming while we stand and sing.